You are listening to a Hillbilly Horror Stories classic episode.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twain. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, eh?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Polly, and their dog Ninja.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Hillbilly Horror Stories, episode 103. I'm Jerry, and I'm joined by my lovely wife Tracy. We're in our matching Mothman shirts.
We are.
They're not really matching. They're both Mothman shirts, but they're different colors and different.
Hi everybody. Hope y'all had a great weekend.
They're the same shirt.
Yeah, they're the same. We're just different colors.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just saying how we had a very eventful weekend and we're really exhausted. At least I'm exhausted.
I'm exhausted too. So we had a wedding that I was presiding over for my oldest son, and then Tracy's son had a baby.
Yay!
So grandchild number 67 or something like that for us now.
But it's his first, and oh my gosh. Of course, he's adorable, and welcome to this crazy world, JD. Yep. Love ya.
Now you have JD as a boss and JD as a grandson.
I know. I think I'll call him James.
I'd like to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter what country you're in. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you so much, guys. We love you and pray for you still, and thank you for keeping us safe.
Special prayers go out this week to the families of the duck boat tragedy in Branson, Missouri.
Yeah,
I know, 17 people gone just like that.
I know, and 9 of them, it was one family. I think that's correct. That's crazy.
Absolutely horrible. Then that's all you need. We're going to do Patreon and reviews right after we get finished with our story. But I do want to mention we've got a special guest on a little bit later. Some of you remember about a year ago, Nick Hall lost his daughter tragically in a car accident. And he came on and we did a little tribute to her. And then he came on, talked to us for a little bit. He wanted to come back on and kind of give an update as we approach the year anniversary, which is this coming Friday.
That's hard to believe.
So now, Nick, we did a little interview, and that'll be on. But in between that interview and the story, we'll do the Patreon and the reviews.
Okay. Love you, Nick.
This week's story, another one of the big ones out there. We try to stay away from some of these because it's been done to death, but people keep asking, so what are you going to do?
Just do it.
Fine, I will.
Dang it.
Dang.
Dang. Come get some help. No. That was
horrible.
Wasn't that terrible?
Trans Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
I feel like it's where I need to be right now.
Well, this is back-to-back stories from West Virginia, and it almost seems like 3 weeks in a row because 3 weeks ago we went to West Virginia. We didn't do a story on West Virginia. So we went to West Virginia, did a story last week on West Virginia, and this week we're back again. So your state, if you live there, has definitely had an impact on us. But this one's in Weston, West Virginia, and the original name was Trans Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. That's not us trying to be politically incorrect, or because every time we do one of these where you use an old-time name like Lunatic Asylum, people are always like, well, I can't believe we're not making fun of people. That's what the name was.
Yeah.
That's history. You know, I can't change what history was.
Yeah.
So anyways.
So move on.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we're doing. So construction began in 1958, and it was done so with prison labor. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot in these state institutions. Now, if you remember when we did last week's story on the prison, we talked about West Virginia seceded from Virginia, and they didn't have any resources, so they had to get on the ball and build prisons and schools. And this was one of those things that were done roughly the same time. And did I mention that this was, and I still believe is accurate, the largest hand-cut stone building in the United States.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, it was pretty big. And apparently it was all hand cut.
I wonder how long it took to do that.
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you know.
Well, they started building in 1858. Like I said, it was all done with prison labor. This hospital was built according to what is commonly known as the Kirkbride Plan. Mm-hmm. Now, this was named after a Philadelphia psychiatrist named Thomas Story Kirkbride. It's kind of a cool name. Mm-hmm. I want to have a middle name like Story.
Yeah. Jerry Story Polly. I don't know. Don't flow as good.
So, that's what they called me back in high school.
Is that right?
No.
That's what I thought.
So, anyways, this guy, he was the first doctor in the United States that recognized that mental illness was a disease, basically, and it could be, I guess, treated and potentially be cured.
Oh,
so. And nobody had that approach before him. Uh-huh. So he felt that people were affected by mental illness could also still enjoy things in life that everybody else enjoys. Yeah. You know, they could read a book, or they could intellectually be stimulated, and they could have the physical comforts of everybody else. Right. Where a lot of people before treated them like outcasts.
Yeah, that's terrible to do that.
His plan was to build a facility and create an environment where these patients could benefit from architectural design, as well as being treated with dignity, compassion, and respect.
Good. That's the way it needs to be. And you said respect.
Fair enough. Thanks for calling me out. I meant respect. This is going to be quite the task to get through with all this story tonight. I can already see.
I love you, though.
Yeah, whatever. Mm. So the building design itself would have long staggered wings, not like a bat. Just like wings of a hospital. So it's got long standard wings that gave the rooms access to light and fresh air.
Good.
So that's the plan. So these are like, when you see pictures of it, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. But they're not real, it's not your standard building. It's like long skinny hallways with just some rooms. And then you could get light and air from both directions. Good. So it wouldn't all closed in like some buildings. As we said earlier, construction started in 1858. The first patients came in 1864, but it wasn't completed until 1881.
Oh my gosh, no way.
So it was a very long time.
Yeah.
Now, why was it take so long? Well, the first part of it is, when you figure it started in 1858, but didn't have the first patients until 1864, it's because the Civil War interrupted it.
Oh, that would do it.
It's also important to note that by the time that the hospital actually opened up and had patients, it had changed its name from the horrible name that it was to the West Virginia Hospital for the Insane. Not much better.
Oh, well, that's better.
But it was better. And this 160-year-old facility has had a fascinating story ranging from the bad, which would be Civil War raids that we'll get into in a little bit, a gold robbery that we'll also get into in a little bit, and then you've had the good stuff like the fact that there were people who actually wanted to help, and the mentally ill patients that so many others had just given up on.
Well, thank heavens for them.
Speaking of the Civil War and the gold robbery, so here's what happened. West Virginia, of course, seceded from Virginia. We talked about that. In June of 1861, West Virginia seceded from Virginia. That's like we talked about last week, so they had to have all these facilities built. On June 30th, 1861, the 7th Ohio Infantry, led by Colonel Erastus Bernard Tyler, came to town, and they decided what they were supposed to be doing was rounding up what they called Confederate, what did they call them, sympathizers.
Oh.
So it's just people that were pretty much siding with the Confederate. That's what they said they were doing. They were coming in, but turns out that's not really what they were in town for. They were there to steal $27,000 worth of gold coins. Oh. Which in the 1860s, that was worth about $500,000.
Nice.
So they came in to do that. They were stored at the West Virginia branch of the Exchange Bank of Virginia. So they go into the bank, demanded this money. Well, that money was actually for the construction of the insane asylum.
Oh.
Yeah, so that money was at the bank, and that was what it was there for. So they come in there and took it.
People, I swear. Get a job.
Now, I found this a bit odd. So the banker, a guy named Robert McLandish, he tried to talk to a Captain List. That's the guy that was in charge of trying mm-hmm. to come in and take all the money. He tried to talk him out of taking the money. So you imagine that's probably not going to happen. You usually can't mm-hmm. bargain with somebody that's trying to rob your bank one way, shape, or form. But what I thought was pretty cool was he was able to talk him into leaving $2,371.23 because that's what was already owed to creditors.
Oh.
So the guy left him enough to pay the bill, so I guess whoever they owed money to wouldn't be behind.
Oh, that is the weirdest thing I've heard.
That's what I thought. I thought it was kind of cool.
But that was kind of cool, yeah.
And then the rest was actually sent up to Wheeling, West Virginia, and they were using that to use that money to start the administration of the mm-hmm. new state. So the state was the one taking it from them.
Yeah.
So I was like, this makes no sense whatsoever.
But that is really weird. That is really weird. I guess the robber was kind of nice in a way.
Yeah. Well, and then the 7th Ohio, they took up staying in the asylum. Even though it wouldn't finish building yet, they only had part of it built. So they kind of took it over there, and then they used some of it as their barracks, and then they used the main foundation to stable the horses. As we said earlier, construction continued all the way up to 1881, and when the construction was completed, it covered 666 acres.
Ooh, can they had one more acre? What was up with that?
I think that may have been a sign to come.
Sounds like.
The hospital was initially built to hold 250 patients. By 1880, they already had 717. By 1938, they had 1,400. A report issued by a group of medical experts said that the population included alcoholics, drug addicts, and non-educated mental defectives.
Well, that's terrible. I mean, golly.
They definitely had a different opinion of how of people.
Boy, didn't they really? I mean, that's so weird.
The hospital hit its peak in the 1950s. The hospital had 2,600 patients.
Aww.
The facility, now known as the Weston State Hospital, that's a little better.
Yeah.
Had 10 times the amount that it was meant to hold.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need to tell you what happens when you get severe overcrowding
yeah.
at a prison or a hospital.
Mm-hmm. There's not enough food.
They had enough food, but they typically don't have enough staff.
Oh my gosh, seriously, not.
So you end up with horrible substandard conditions, which is what happened here.
Oh, that's sad.
In 1949, the Charleston Gazette had a series of reports that shed light on the lack of furniture, light, and heat. And very poor sanitation.
See, they didn't deserve that.
By the 1980s, the population had decreased, but the mistreatment of the patients had not decreased.
Aww.
Patients who could not be controlled were locked into cages.
Now, see.
That reminds me of something about Mary. When, what's his name? Matt Dillon was trying to impress Mary, and he was mm-hmm. talking about. He said he worked at that place and they kept them in cages, but they'd let them out sometimes and let them get some air and stuff. And he thought he was saying something smart.
Yeah.
Like the most repulsive thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the hospital was shut down in 1994.
Goodness gracious.
Man. So, this is I say fun part, but it's not really fun, I don't guess.
I don't see how anything fun can come out of this.
What would have made you a patient at this hospital? Symptoms and causes of insanity were wide, diverse, and in some cases, completely subjective. There were legitimate patients here that had legitimate problems, but in the 1800s, a family member, usually the man of the family, could have a spouse or children committed with virtually no supporting evidence.
Now, see, that's stupid on those other people's part. That's why they were so overcrowded.
Well, this is the way it was history-wise back in this day. People in society worked from a completely different set of, I guess, what our definition of normal is today.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine if it was today, back then? You know what I'm saying? With them saying they could say anything or do anything and put you there?
Oh, yeah. Well, they wouldn't be able to do it back then. That's progressing in history to learn, you know, what's right and what's wrong. So it was male-dominated. Women were thought of as the weaker and softer sex.
Bitches.
Which?
Not true.
And they were treated that way, well, unfortunately.
Shame on them, men.
Therefore, all it took was an angry husband or a father to commit you. Where do you see some of these things? I can't wait to read some of these things. If a husband wanted to have an affair with another woman, he'd just drop his wife off and be done with her for a little bit. He'd make up some kind of a symptom that basically was just a lie and dispose of her for a month, few months, few years, or even a lifetime.
So they could go in and get him out whenever they wanted.
Pretty much.
Basically. Mm-hmm. What a bunch of mofos.
Now, you had situations like autism and Down syndrome that parents didn't really know how to handle or deal with back then. So you might be able to understand how a parent could feel helpless and think this might be a place to take your kids if you just didn't know what else to do. That's just an ignorance situation from back then.
Yeah. They
just didn't know. Unfortunately, not all of the committals at this point in time were for the right reason. Here are a couple of situations that were not for the right reason. If you had a wife that had an inheritance and you wanted access to it, you could just bring her in, have her committed, and now you've got access to whatever
money
you've
got. Now, see, that just pisses me off. See, Ninja even agrees. That is bull crap.
Tired of dealing with a troublesome child? Drop them off. Because you know the sad thing about here? There were no age limits.
Oh, no.
Yep. No age limits at all.
I can't even imagine doing that.
So now you've got all these people that had no problems mentally or physically that are now mixed in with a bunch
of
people
that did have problems. And then if they ever do come out, then they really do have issues afterward, probably. I mean, my gosh, they're like, dang, why are you just dropping me off in here and leaving me?
People were committed for masturbation.
Well, honey.
Fits. Desertion of husband. Laziness. Reading novels.
What?
Reading novels. Superstitions. I mean, can you believe all this stuff?
I mean, I shouldn't point out masturbation, but why was... I thought that was a good thing.
Now, most of these, I don't really understand. It blows my mind. But here's one that I do kind of agree with. Menstrual derangement.
Well, I can almost see that myself. Being a woman, you know, I know we get a little bit cray cray, but dang it, that's the most that's a terrible word to say. Almost said insane. That I am so sorry. I did not even want to say that because these reasons are so beyond ridiculous that I'm going to punch you in your face for saying it. What'd you say?
I mean, they've got, look, here's a couple of them. Asthma, bad company.
Bad company? Bad company.
No, I don't think it was the bad. Bad whiskey.
Well, I'd be mad if I had bad whiskey.
Bite of a rattlesnake.
What the heck? What?
Business nerves. Carbonic acid gas. I have no clue.
Who is the idiot?
I couldn't even
that
read.
That came up with all this.
Jealousy. You could be put in there for jealousy. I mean, think about that.
I mean, who decides that? Who decides that? A man. Oh, that's who did it. A man.
Pretty much, yeah. Milk fever. I don't know what that is.
What the hell's milk fever?
I have no idea.
Who's making this stuff up?
Nymphomania. You could be put in there for.
This is so, thank the Lord I wasn't born until then.
All right. So, I know, my God.
I know.
I mean, literally everybody that I know would have been in there for one reason or another reading this. There's four pages.
Everybody.
And you know what the ironic thing is? Masturbation is what keeps me sane.
Oh. Hello, folks.
Anyways, so let's move on. What's more disturbing about the reasons that you could get put in this place is the fact that there were so many children in there that they needed a whole floor to have a children's ward, which was on the second floor.
Wow.
That's a lot of kids in there.
That breaks my heart. That's really bad. Let's go find those kids. We'll love them all.
So I guess you got to ask yourself the question of what kind of life, what kind of hope, what kind of joy could a child have at a place like this? I mean, maybe in the beginning when they didn't have a lot of people you know, and the intentions were set forth the right way in the beginning. Maybe they were, but not as the population started climbing. You know, God only knows how good or how bad life could be for some of these kids that's spent their entire life here.
I mean, even just the beginning of your parents giving you away or putting you there, and you don't even know why.
And we're going to talk about some of that, too. So today, you can hear an occasional voice or laughter of children, even though the place has been closed down since 1994. In some cases, it's even been recorded, and we're going to talk about a couple of those. We'll put a little special attention on the most famous ghost that they have, which is a little girl by the name of Lily.
Lily.
No. Whatever. Anyway, so the hospital had three cemeteries, thousands of burials.
Thousands?
Think about that. Thousands of burials. Well, I mean, it was around for 160 years.
Right? Yeah. Well, true.
Most of these are in unmarked graves. Death was not an uncommon thing at Trans-Allegheny. Most of the deaths, though, were from disease and epidemics and stuff like that. There were some murders, though, that happened there.
Jeez.
There was a nurse who went missing and was discovered months later. Months. Her body was stuffed under the back staircase.
What?
First of all, that's got to tell you how bad it smelled in that place.
Oh my gosh, how would you not notice that?
I mean, you've got a rotting body that's been stuffed under a staircase. I think the staircase was inside. I don't think it was an outside staircase.
Aw. I'm sorry, honey. No. That happened to you.
So then you got another case that where a patient stabbed another patient 17 times. He bled out trying to crawl to the nurse's station.
Oh, my gosh.
When they asked him about it, he said it was an accident.
Oh, what, he fall on the knife 17 times?
I'm
what?
Just kidding.
Oh, my God, that's terrible. Well, I mean, where were these people? I mean, I know there are, like, so many people in there, but you can't tell me nobody saw somebody stabbing somebody 17 times?
I imagine you could stab somebody 17 times in less than a minute, and it could take a minute to get from, this place was huge. So there may not have been somebody there in time to do it. Just look at prisons. Mm-hmm. They're watched over like crazy, and look how many things happen there.
I know. So.
The most horrific murder, though, wasn't that long ago. This happened in 1987. And HIPAA laws were in effect, so we can't really give out names and stuff like that because it wasn't made available with this being a hospital.
Yeah.
They couldn't just release the names. But even though details are a little sketchy, what supposedly happened is one account says that two patients killed a third by brutally beating the third patient to death.
What's the point of that?
Well, that sounds bad.
Well, yeah, it is bad.
It's not as bad as the full story. That's the Reader's Digest version. Oh, Reader's Digest, don't sue us for using that. They're not relevant anymore. They ought to be happy anybody's talking about them at all.
I liked Reader's Digest.
Liked. Keyword. Here's the main account. They said that basically they grabbed the victim. They beat him till he was unconscious. Then they tried to hang him with bed sheets. That wasn't working. So they drug him to a bed. It was one of those big metal beds.
Yeah.
They lifted it up, put his head underneath the post.
Don't. Please don't say it.
And they crushed his skull under the bedpost.
Oh, my gosh.
And they didn't just do it once. They did it over and over and over.
That's so awful. No.
When they asked the ringleader why he did this, he said that he was taking up all of his oxygen.
Oh, my gosh.
So is there any wonder that a place like this would have so much paranormal activity?
Yeah, this is just awful.
Thousands of people were dumped here just like garbage. Several of these patients chose suicide as their only way out. So you've got that. They said depression practically seeps through the walls here. And by the way, these walls were like 2.5 feet thick. So you couldn't hear people, to answer your question.
No.
You can't hear people through them, whether they're crying, whether they're happy. They were made that way for a reason. So it's almost a soundproof type building if you're outside of the room that they're in. So yeah, you could probably get away with murder and not even know it.
Man. That's just so bad.
Guards and visitors say they can feel the spirits here, and it's as if some spirits just stop by on their way to somewhere else, and then others are trapped here for eternity. As horrible as the living conditions and the treatment of the patients were, that's not the worst of what I've got to tell you.
What the crap, man?
The worst thing to go on here was the ice pick lobotomy. And we've talked about that before on the show. Dr. Walter Freeman, who made his name by doing these full frontal lobotomies that he perfected after learning about it in another country, he perfected it here in the U.S. And a matter of fact, if you want to hear more about him, go listen to Stat with Karen Wickham, because she did like a three-part story on him.
Mm-hmm.
He did so many of these lobotomies. He traveled from place to place to place doing this that he called his car the Lobotomobile. It's catchy.
It is catchy, but wow.
So if you're unfamiliar and haven't listened to a previous episode where we talked about this, the ice pick lobotomy was a very crude procedure. It involved using a sharp instrument, such as an ice pick. Sometimes it had one prong, sometimes two prong. It was driven through the orbital socket of your eye into the brain with a sharp blow. This caused permanent damage, thought to relieve some of the patient's more severe symptoms. In 1952, Dr. Freeman did 228 of these lobotomies in a two-week period at Trans-Allegheny alone.
Oh, my God. He must have been working 24/7.
Well, it didn't take him long, if you've ever seen a demonstration of his procedure.
What kind of sick individual does that? Like, seriously.
I mean, and this guy took pride in it. I mean,
it's just hard to fathom that.
We won't get into too much on him, but, I mean, his story is fascinating from a standpoint. I mean, he was doing parents. He was doing, people would take their wife in. That they weren't insane. It was just, seemed a little bit depressed. Here, let's do this. Or kids that were hyperactive. He did one on, I think it was a 10-year-old little boy, because he was hyperactive, basically. So, yeah, he didn't care. He was $100 a pop. That's about what he got. So, just think about that. He was making a living off of destroying people's front brains. All right, so let's imagine with what we've just heard, you would think there's going to be some pretty good ghost stories to come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a bunch of them. So let's start with the most famous resident spirit here, Lily. We talked about her briefly. According to tour guides, Lily likes to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Her room is the most popular area of the hospital. That's where everybody likes to go. Her room is on the corner of the fourth ward, up in the very back corner. And it's between Ward 1 and the Civil War section of the hospital. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Find it odd that her room, because she was a kid, is on the fourth floor when the children's ward was on the second floor.
Wonder what that was about. We need to try to look into that, maybe.
No.
You said no.
I've looked into enough on it. Oh, it's where her room is, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to find anything. I mean, I think maybe that's just a room, because she shows up everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know why she's got one certain room unless they just designated it that. The staff there have turned her room into kind of like a little shrine for Lily. It's got all kinds of dolls. It's got toys. It's got balls. And
that's nice.
It's got a special music box that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff is in this room. So it's pretty cool. So just who is Lily? That's a good question. Legend has it that she's a little girl who spent most or all of her life here at Trans-Allegheny. Some say that she was one of these drop-offs that we talked about a little bit earlier, and others say she was born here shortly after her mother was committed. She died of pneumonia when she was 9 years old. After she passed, this is the only home she's ever had, so she just stays here.
Mm-hmm.
Lily's the most active spirit at the hospital. It said that she likes to play games with visitors. She likes to reach up and tug on her dresses or tug on her pants. And she also likes to reach out. She's no stranger to anybody. So she likes to reach up and grab their hands.
What a sweetie.
Just to kind of hold their hands. The staff has become extremely close with Lily. And some of the guides like to go out of their way to make her feel special. They talk to her every single day.
That's great.
Her room is bright, cheery yellow, But the peeling paint kind of reminds you that nobody's lived here for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And then when you look up and see the bars in the window, you kind of really get shook back to reality mm-hmm. on what it must have been like here to be basically a prisoner in this what was supposed to be a hospital. Now, one of the toys in the room is a pink and white music box. And it's got a little miniature ballerina on it. It plays a little lullaby song when the box is opened up. But sometimes it just decides it's going to play on its own.
Mm.
And it's got to be wound up.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. And that's going to tie in a little bit to a story that Nick told us a little bit later without even knowing that we were going to talk about this. Kind of
awesome.
Eerie. We mentioned she's got all kinds of toys and stuff scattered throughout her room. And that's more or less an invitation for her to come out and play.
Mm-hmm.
Several of these items have been moved on their own or in response to a command. Lily likes to roll the ball back and forth with visitors come in there. So it was during one of these times that Lily can be heard giggling. Like when she's rolling the ball and stuff like that, you can hear her giggling and it echoes through the halls. Sometimes she laughs so loud.
Oh, very nice.
Because the tour guides have this bond with Lily, they demand that anybody that comes in there has respect for her. They won't let anybody make fun of her. They won't make anybody be sarcastic with her, any of that.
Aww.
It says that Lily remembers frequent visitors. So if they're there a lot, she interacts with them in very specific ways. Aaron Solzer, he's a paranormal investigator. He says that he's been out there like 12 times. And he's got a favorite game that he likes to play with her that involves the music box and a flashlight. So he takes and sets up the flashlights in several different places of the room.
Uh-huh.
And then he'll ask her questions after he gets the flashlight set up and he turns the little key for the music box, gets it all wound up. He starts asking her questions and she will answer through the music box and the lights. Like, for example, the lights will dim when the music box starts getting low and it starts slowing down.
Oh.
And when he speeds it up, then all of a sudden the lights
get bright.
Work on bright and on full speed. So that's kind of a cool little thing that he does with her. It happens so much and so regular during the session that he doesn't even dispute there's no possible way that it couldn't be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he said that he always gets a positive response out of her. And that correlation between the flashlight and the music box means that without a doubt she's happy to be communicating.
How fun.
So what facts do we know about Lily and what her story is based on? Not a whole lot. But in 2010, a psychic by the name of Tammy Wilson, she's the one who first discovered that there was a small child in there named Lily while she was on a tour. So that's the first that anybody really put a name to it. Said the girl was 9 years old. She was wearing a white dress. So that's where we get the age and everything from. Said the little girl said that her mom's name started with an E and that her mom's family was a prominent family out of England. They were over here for some reason. And when they brought her to the hospital, she was already pregnant. Then they told her, that her mom, rather, that her parents were killed in a car accident right after they left her, so they were never coming back to get her.
Oh, my gosh.
So Lily was born there at the hospital, at least according to this story. Both Lily and her mom lived the rest of their life there at the asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Patient records from the 1920s show that there's a patient that arrived pregnant with the first name E.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, HIPAA rules and laws, I can't
divulge
that. There's a local historian by the name of Shelley Bailey. She says that she's taken toys and stuff in there, candy. If they leave candy in there, like on a chair, it disappears.
Aww. See, I wish we could do that. That's so amazing.
Well, this is really a cool part of the story. So she said one time her and a couple colleagues went there and they took a box of Cracker Jacks and they set it on the sink. And she says that it started spinning. There's no wind or anything in there. The box of Cracker Jacks on the sink started spinning.
Uh-huh.
Then it fell into the sink.
Mm-hmm.
She said you could hear it bouncing around back in the sink. And then you could hear like a box opening.
Uh-huh.
And you could hear chewing. Crunching. On But the Cracker Jack was still in the box of Cracker Jacks was still in the sink, and it hadn't been opened up.
Oh, my gosh.
But you could hear her chewing and everything. And they had somebody that was doing some recording there at the same time, some EVPs, and they went back and listened to it, it said very plainly, thank you for the snacks.
Oh, are you kidding? Wonder if we could find that.
Oh, it's out there. I haven't listened to it yet.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
I've seen about 3 or 4 different instances where they all said you could hear it really plainly.
I love her.
So Shelley, the same girl, she said that she also had the two people came with her. They were playing a game of catch with her with a ball. They had this plastic ball, and they would roll it, and then it would roll back to one person, and then that person would roll it, and then it would roll to the other person. And they said this went on for like 45 minutes.
How fun is she?
So there's another story that says that Lily's mom is actually a lady by the name of Gladys Ravenfield. Mm-hmm. Raped by a bunch of soldiers back in the 1800s. They brought her here, and she pretty much had lost it from this point in time. She sat in a rocking chair and just went back and forth and back and forth for several hours after they brought her in like a robot. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out she was pregnant from this situation. Mm. She gave birth to an infant girl who survived only a short time. So that's one story of who they think Lily is.
Wow, that's so traumatizing for her.
And then there's a couple other variations of the Lily story. What's the truth? Who knows? Is it a myth? It's a mystery. Not really sure. There's several different EVPs, though, that point out that it's a blonde child and that she's still living there today. Mm. So between the EVPs, between pictures, between sightings of her, that's what everything is based off then.
Of. She sounds like a cool kid.
So we mentioned briefly that there was a Civil War wing. This is the oldest part of the hospital, and it's sometimes referred to as the veterans area. There you can see the spirit of a patient named Ruth. Ruth's kind of a bitch.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. She likes to hang out in the hallways. She's violent towards men, and she likes to throw things at them. Ruth loves to slam people into walls. You'll just be walking down the hallway and get slammed into a wall. That's Ruth. I told you.
That's kind of funny. I guess it's not funny, but
she's probably
is.
One of those that was in there for the menstrual.
Oh, yeah. I'll show you.
Then you've got the fourth floor. So let's mosey on up there. In 1935, a fire gutted most of the fourth floor hallway. And they said it's kind of creepy looking now because they were, instead of redoing it in concrete like the rest of the building is, they redid it in like this wood. And it just makes it have a different look than the rest of the hospital.
I bet.
But that's also the hallway that leads to Lily's room. Now, in the same hallway as Ruth, they've had people obviously pushing in the stairs and stuff, but they also hear sounds coming up and down the hallways. Just footsteps and banging and stuff like that. On the second floor in Ward 2, near the room that the guy was stabbed 17 times in, shadow men have been seen there. Just across that hall, you've got two patients who committed suicide. They tried to hang themselves, or they did hang themselves with curtain rods. So I don't know exactly how you would have done that.
How do you do that?
I mean, I guess, you know, maybe the curtain rods were a lot sturdier or something back then. I'm not sure.
Hmm.
But they used it, I guess, to maybe use a bed linen or something.
Yeah.
A number of EVPs have captured Get Out from within that room where those suicides happen. Many people also hear their name called out while they're in there. I would be scooped so we could have your name called out. On the third floor, there's a nurse's quarters. And there's some doors close to there that close by themselves. One of the tour guides claims that he saw an apparition of a nurse, but it was just like a really quick thing. Mm-hmm. Like five, six seconds, boom, it was gone. In the geriatrics hallways, there's more shadow figures. There seems like that's the most common place for the shadow figures is in the geriatric. And then they get a bunch of strange noises, a lot of moans and groans that are heard here. Across from geriatrics, that's where the most violent women were held. Once again, probably the menstruation ward. That's what they should have just called it. People hear disembodied voices. They get footsteps. They hear screams. There's a ghost named Big Jim who's at the end of that hallway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I found a lot of the names of ghosts and not a lot of reasons for who they were.
Yeah.
A ghost haunts this area as well by the name of Dean. He's one of the murders that took place there.
Mm.
It was like we talked about in the last show. I don't know how they figure out who these ghosts
I don't either.
On the fourth floor, Ward 4 is one of the creepiest of all the wards. Investigators have captured a black blob that is unlike anything they've ever seen there. They asked it on a spirit box what it was, and it responded, demon.
Nice. Oh, just a demon. Well,
yeah. And like Waverly, they've got a creeper. It's an apparition that crawls around on the floor, can crawl up walls, crawl on the ceiling. And you can hear the sound of like something banging on pipes whenever you're up on that in that same area there. There's a ghost named Jesse that also frequents the hallway, and a ghost named Andre, mm-hmm. or Andrew, I'm sorry, that's on that floor.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of ghosts. Now, the Civil War section, we said that was the oldest part. There's a ghost named Jacob. He's an apparition of a Civil War soldier, and he wanders aimlessly around the floor. People hear whispering here like somebody's having a conversation, but there's nobody around, and you can't make out exactly what's being said. Right. And then you can hear also cries and moans, presumably from injured soldiers, because this was the old military ward. There is some bad malevolent spirits at this hospital, and they're usually on the upper floors. One's name is Stewfoot.
Stewfoot?
I have no idea why they named him that, but he's supposed to be a vicious killer.
Mm.
Not a lot of information on him.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is unnamed, but he runs around in the seclusion halls. What's more frightening than all these souls being trapped is the fact that they got to be in there with some kind of demonic or malevolent spirits.
Yeah, so their craziness keeps going on and on and on and on and on. It's just like a non...
Maybe craziness wasn't a good word.
Well, I mean, probably not, but to think about that you were in this place all this time when you're alive and now you're stuck with it in the afterlife, I mean, how horrible is that?
Well, some paranormal experts think that this may have been a place where demonic possession was taking place even when the hospital was in full force.
Because,
You know, we talked before, and I can't remember the episode, and it might have been a Patreon episode, but it was something about when you have homes like this. It was the gentleman that was a Native American, and he talked about he worked at a home that was mainly Native American orphans and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have mental disabilities and stuff like that. And he said that he thinks demons and stuff prey on individuals like that because they are a little bit weaker.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, yeah, it's kind of creepy, but that is the story on Allegheny.
Boy, that is a whole lot of sadness right there.
It really is. It's very sad.
Hmm. Sorry you all had to go through that, peoples.
Well, we're going to do this. We're going to do the Patreons real quick.
Okay.
Before we get to Nick's little interview. But Matthew Gregory, thank you so much. Kate Mentum, Deborah Kinney, and Jenny Sandrot.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate y'all so much.
I said that wrong. It's Sandercott.
Sandercott?
I thought Sandrot sounded really bad.
No, that didn't sound good.
Jenny, sorry.
Jenny, you know how he goes. But we appreciate and love you guys so much.
We had a few reviews in this week. Not as many as last week. It's a really big discrepancy for whatever reason. We got Phoenix Fire.
Tired. Sorry, I was talking while you said that. What?
That's okay. I'm used to you talking
Phoenix
about
Fire.
Phoenix Fire. Dan Lever. Jen 71293. And X Rook X.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate you.
So we're going to listen to Nick. And this is another one of those little touching interviews. Mm-hmm. And we're going to end it with something probably inappropriate, which is Tracy had a little giggling. I screwed up, and I know y'all don't, I think it's physically impossible for me to screw something up.
Yeah.
But I did, and she got on a laughing kick. Keep in mind, neither one of us had sleep in 3 days, so we're delirious. And she got on a little laughing kick, and I decided to cut it out and not use it in the regular show. But I am going to put it on as a little blooper at the end. So if you want a good laugh, I got about 2 minutes of uncontrollable laughing for you, along with my flub. So, but let's take a second and talk to Nick and talk about his baby girl. Guys, I am joined by Nick Hall, who experienced one of life's great tragedies approximately a year ago when he lost his 8-year-old daughter, Brianna, in a horrific automobile accident that did severe injuries to his wife, Katie, and his other daughter, Michaela. He had his younger son in the vehicle, which luckily pretty much got out of the thing unscathed. But when anytime you lose a child, as he did with 8-year-old Brianna, then that's every parent's worst nightmare. And we brought Nick on, did a little tribute to Brianna last year. A lot of you will remember that. And then we brought Nick on shortly after. He thanked everybody for the letters of support he was getting from all over the world. And he reached out to me and said there were some situations going on, some occurrences that he felt like maybe she was reaching out to him as they come upon this year anniversary. And I wanted to bring him on. Nick, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. I'm glad you had me back on.
Well, we're glad to have you back on. A lot of people have asked about you over the last year. They want to know how things are going in life right now. So this would be a great time to give an update. So you reached out to me and you said there was some things going on. Tell me a little bit about what's been happening.
Yeah, there's been a few unique things go on. You know, when I had talked to you before on the show, we were living in Lexington. And actually not long after I did that interview with you, you know, we just wanted to try to talk to her, and we're both paranormal investigators, have done investigations for years, so, you know, we knew EVP was a good way to do that. So we would just sit around at night when we were in bed alone and talk to her, you know. Sometimes you could hear something, but this one time, it was not only caught on the recorder, but we actually heard it by ear. Katie had said something, you know, about, "Good night, baby, I love you," or something to that effect, which we do every night. And plain as day, you heard in her voice her say, "Mama." And that just, I mean, it scared both of us at first, and then, of course, we started crying. But there have been a few other things. There's a jewelry box at my mom and dad. She was really close to my mom, especially, that somebody gave them with pictures of her in it as a kind of a present after the funeral. Well, several times she must like it because nobody will be in the room, nobody will have touched it, and it's one of those where you have to wind it up and lift the lid for it to work, mm-hmm. and it'll just start playing.
Let me tell you what's so odd about that story is you don't know this, obviously, because we're recording this before we record the show, but in tonight's show about the Trans-Allegheny Mental Hospital, there's their most famous ghost is a 9-year-old little blonde-haired girl, and her name is Lily, and one of the ways she likes to communicate is she has a music box that you wind up, and she likes to use that music box and play the music and use flashlights to communicate with the paranormal investigator. So that's kind of a cool coincidence that you would bring that up on tonight of all nights.
Yeah, that is uncanny.
So how is Katie and your daughter Michaela doing physically a year after the accident?
Katie's probably about 80%, close to 90 maybe, of what she was pre-accident. She still has, of course, you know, the aches and pains, and especially with this wet weather we've had lately, she's really had to tough it out, but she's doing good. And Michaela, physically, she's healed about as much, you know, as you could ask for, but mentally, it's going to be still probably a lifetime project of overcoming, you know, everything that happened to her as a result of the accident.
I know right after the accident, Katie had to have multiple surgeries. Michaela, she had some major head trauma. So, I mean, that's had to be a very long uphill battle to try to deal with.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, it's going to be something we're going to deal with, if not physically, at least emotionally and mentally for the rest of our lives. And then in Michaela's case, you know, she's going to have the added burden of the mental handicap that she's going to have now. You know, it's just, it's impacted so many lives. And we're actually, it's one reason why I wanted to come on. For anybody that listens in the area around where we're from, on Friday, the anniversary of the accident, we're going to meet at the accident site. Anybody that wants to come, and we're going to do a balloon release and, you know, the Chinese lanterns, we're going to release those in her honor.
Nick, what kind of thoughts are going through your head as you approach the year anniversary? I'm sure a lot of this stuff that had started to distance itself a little bit now comes right back to the forefront as you think about it being exactly a year ago to the day this Friday.
It is, and actually just today I just thought about this. I guess I hadn't thought completely through it, just dreading that day so much. You know, as soon as, well, not as soon as, but several hours after we found out, I found out about the accident, up till, you know, weeks and months later, I was every day posting posts and pictures and stuff on Facebook, and now I'm going to have to see all that all over again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for that period of time.
Yeah.
So it's going to bring up, you know, every memory, just like it was, you know, 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, those Facebook memories can be a double-edged sword. I mean, you look at some of them and it's like, oh, that's a great memory. I forget all about that. But then when you've got a situation like this and it brings back all these memories of things that you're just not going to be able to see in person again, it's, you know, like I said, it's got its positives and its negatives.
Well, I love it, though, because, you know, you see things from 5, 7,
yep,
8, 10 years ago that you had forgot about. Until you see that post or that picture, and you're like, oh, yeah, I remember, you know, when this happened or that happened.
I would think those memories have to be bittersweet. As much as it makes you smile to see something like that, at the same time, you know, it's a reminder of what you don't have anymore.
It does. I just shared a post yesterday, actually, I think it was, from the Facebook memories from 5 years ago when I was taking Ben at her first softball game, her t-ball game. Hmm. And her just making a goofy face, you know, and then you see that and you remember that and you laugh and you smile, but then at the same time, I never get to see her make that face again, you know?
Well, brother. Well, Nick, I know everybody out here will be thinking about you as Friday approaches this week. You've got all of our thoughts, all of our prayers. And all I can do is just tell you to keep your head up, brother, and it's going to get better. Just keep staying positive. I know you have been. I know it's had its ups and downs. I'm glad that the family is getting better physically. I mean, mentally, it will come in time. It obviously is not something you just get over, you know, so we all completely understand that.
Yeah, you have to. She wouldn't want us to give up and quit.
Nick, thanks for coming on and giving us an update. I know it's extremely hard to talk about something like this, but hopefully there's somebody out there that this gives a little bit hope to that might be struggling with a situation like this, and hopefully seeing the way you handle things will make it a little easier on somebody else.
Jerry, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Tell Tracy I said hello.
I tell you what, they are some strong people because mm-hmm. I can't imagine having to deal with that situation. I mean, I guess when you're forced with it, you don't really have much of an option, but man.
I know. I mean, it's tough, and I can't say I know what you're going through because it's not happened to me, but, you know, just know that her little sweet face and self is with you all the time. It's your little angel, and I'm sure she's by your side every day.
Yeah, we love you, Nick. We love you, Katie.
Yeah, we do love you guys, honey.
And take care of your family. Guys, we're going to go ahead and jump off here. This is the last week to get tickets for Indianapolis. Come see us, Mysterious Circumstances, and Out of the Shadows podcast. It's going to be fun. It's going to be at Scotty's Brew House, which is a cool restaurant. Lots of good burgers, all kinds of craft beers. Come out and have a good time with us. Hang out with us. Real quick, we didn't forget. Here's the blooper. The 7th Ohio Infantry.
can't stand you. Come on. Oh my God. Help us, Jesus.
Are you done?
Do that. Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Hey Hillbillies, if you guys enjoy what we do here on the show every week and appreciate all the hard work we put into it, consider being one of our Patreon supporters. All you got to do is go to our website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com, click on the tab for donations, and you'll see the Patreon link right there. Click on it and you can go to our Patreon page. Then you will have a decision to make. You can choose the $1, the $3, the $5, or the $10 donation. Each one gets you different things a month, but regardless, you get some free stuff. Just check out the bonuses under each tier and you'll see what you get for free for that month, but you'll get something free regardless. Also, if you'd like to buy any Hillbilly Horror Story merch, you're also in the right place on the website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com. Just click on the store page and see whatever it is that you like. Click on a few links, send a little bit of money, and your item will be on its way. Thank you guys so much for all of your support. We love you, we thank you, and we appreciate you.